It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are not just available on the radio, but also available on your computer or mobile device at jeffexchange.org with streaming audio and a look at our program topics and recordings attached to those once the topics have aired, a look ahead to future editions of the Jefferson Exchange, all available at jeffexchange.org. We also maintain a Facebook presence. You can find many of the same links there and the Listen Live link, and you can also get a look at our studio guests when we have them here, as in not on the phone. We maintain a Twitter feed at Jeff Exchange, and of course you can take part in the program as it happens. Take part in our conversations at 800-838-3760. That's 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. There's generally excitement when a woman announces that she's pregnant, but in about half of all pregnancies in America, the news is as much a surprise to the pregnant woman as it is to the friends and family she informs. You've heard the slogan, "Every child a wanted child." It's more than a slogan. It is also a public health goal across the country, and the Oregon Health Authority is implementing a new strategy to achieve that goal. The steps are remarkably simple and revolve around doctors having conversations with women of childbearing age. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is with us. He is with the Umpqua Health Alliance based in Roseburg, which is one of the state's coordinated care organizations. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Give us an idea of the picture now. I mean, obviously with about half the pregnancies listed in federal charts as unintended, it is that much of a surprise.
That is not much of a surprise. During the day, I'm a pediatrician, so I get to see young women who have babies and then the babies of those young women. And indeed, many of those pregnancies are unintended and somewhat of a surprise.
And so I know it's listed as a national goal to reduce unintentional pregnancies, to make sure that when you want to have a kid, you're having a kid, and the averse is true. So how long a goal, though?
This is a goal that this is not going to be a quick goal to achieve, but it's certainly something that we'd like to get to. You know, we see that many of these women who have babies at a younger age will make great moms, but they have lots of in their life to figure out before they will become great moms. And so when I see a 16 or 17 year old that's pregnant, I know that that pregnancy will in many ways derail their future. They could wait till they're 23 or 24 and have their life in order. Things would be so much better for them and for their child.
Do the numbers tend to skew a little higher in non-urban areas? Now, granted, Roseburg itself is urbanized, but it's a pretty rural area around you there. I'm curious to know if in Douglas County in particular, your numbers are somewhat higher than, say, in Multnomah County or Clackamas.
This is an equal opportunity problem. So we see this problem in urban and rural areas. We see this among all ethnic and racial groups, so that this is not a problem of one group or another.
All right, so not urban, not rural, not necessarily. But it does tend to skew, as I understand, a bit younger, too, and perhaps in economic status as well?
Yeah, so economic status we do think has a factor in that we think that poor women sometimes don't have the access to contraceptive care as perhaps people who are better off.
All right, so then what are the steps taken to make sure that they can get access to contraceptive care and things like that? I mean, there got to be components other than just the medical part. I mean, is there an education component that works throughout the state as well?
Undoubtedly. I think this is going to be multifactorial. I think we have to really set out that we want people to have babies, but we want them to have babies when they want to have them. So I think there's clearly a public health message that needs to get out there that we haven't done much of in the last few years. In addition, we have to have the methods of effective birth control available for women.
Does the creation of coordinated care organizations like the Umpqua Health Alliance give a new avenue of approach then? I mean, does it provide essentially a new way to reach people?
It does. You know, the coordinated care organizations were given as part of this task a real task to coordinate and work with the community. So, for example, we have a community advisory council of citizens in the county who work with us. We've also done a lot of outreach for wellness and other kinds of things. So this, I think, is part of the coordinated care organization's role to contact and connect with people in the community.
And for the folks who have not actually had any contact with a coordinated care organization, can you drop us back a little further and give us an idea of what it is they do?
So the coordinated care organization in Oregon are typically community-based organizations. Right now we're providing care for people who are on Oregon Health Plan, which is the Medicaid population. And we hope to provide care which is coordinated physical health, mental health, and dental health. So we like to coordinate those services and really, really work on patient-centered care.
Will it always be restricted just to the Medicaid population, or I mean, is that essentially the mission of CCOs? Will they ever expand to go beyond Medicaid?
Well, we're hoping, and the hope is that it would eventually expand. At this point, it's pretty much just the Medicaid population. You know, the governor has talked in the past about expanding the coordinated care organizations for the teachers population and the PEB population, but I think that's somewhere down the line.
PEB being the Public Employees Benefit Board and Public Employee
yes.
Benefit, yeah, something like that. Okay. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with the Umpqua Health Alliance. We are talking about trends in Oregon and an actual concerted effort to bring down unintentional pregnancies within the state. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about pregnancies, intentional, unintentional, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Is it a matter of fairly careful wording, Dr. Dannenhofer, that you're trying to make sure you say unintentional versus unwanted?
Yes, because I think many moms, once they are pregnant, clearly want the baby. We are certainly not suggesting that a pregnancy that is unintentional has an unwanted baby, because most of these babies are dearly loved. So I certainly don't want to get the sense that we would equate the two. On the other hand, some of the unintended pregnancies are also unwanted, and though that's a very worrisome thing, because we know the bonding in unwanted pregnancies is poor, we have a very hard to know how many of the unintended pregnancies are also unwanted.
All right, and it's the verbiage you have to tiptoe around carefully, I would think, but also the just bringing up the subject matter, because it obviously in a country where there are often fights about reproductive rights, it seems like this is an area that can turn ugly fairly fast.
I believe it can turn ugly, but I think this is the most constructive approach. And I think the most constructive approach, I don't think there's anybody who could disagree that unintended pregnancies are something we could reduce, because obviously we reduce unintended pregnancies, we will reduce the number of abortions. We reduce the number of unintended pregnancies. We will help women have those years until they want pregnant, until they intend to have pregnancy, to go ahead and go to school and do other things in their lives that will make the future of their lives so much better.
So the news piece that got this all started was a piece a couple of weeks ago indicating the Oregon Health Authority was making a new set of mechanisms that it wants to implement, evidently through the coordinated care organizations, to approach this subject, to broach the subject with women of childbearing age. Can you walk us through what the directives are from OHA and how they're implemented?
So in the formation of the CCOs, one of the important parts of that was that some of the payments to the CCOs would be based on attaining certain scores or certain metrics. So the governor appointed a metrics committee, which I chair, and over the last few years, we've worked on metrics. So in the first year, we had some fairly simple ones, things like adolescent well child visits or colorectal cancer screening, and we set for those things the current performance, the benchmark performance, and then plans are given credit if they meet the benchmark or meet progress towards the benchmark. So for the first few years, we had 17 measures. Over this next year, we've retired some measures, and we've added some new measures. And one of the measures we've added for this year is the use of effective contraception.
And so what then is the set of procedures that come with that? I mean, you go ahead and list measures and goals, but then what are some of the mechanisms you put in place to say, here's how we get to that goal?
Right. So we know, or we can tell from the data that the plan submit, what percentage of the women on their plan are using effective contraception. And we can do that because we know that they're picking up their birth control pills, or they've gotten a shot of Depo-Provera, or we've paid for an IUD. So we know among the women who are on the plan what percent are using effective contraception. And the goal is to raise that number to whatever we choose as the benchmark. And we've not yet chosen the benchmark, and we've not yet chosen the exact methodology. But the hope is that we can bring the number up, which is now in about the 30s. We think if you really ask women if they really wanted effective contraception, the number would be considerably higher.
When you say in the 30s, like 30% and some?
Yes, about 30%. And it varies among the CCOs and varies a little bit by the definitions. But the numbers among the various CCOs is generally in the low 30s.
Of women who have access to contraception or using them regularly?
They all have access, but of the ones who actually use effective contraception.
All right. We're talking to Bob Dannenhofer on the Jefferson Exchange about approaches to reducing unintentional pregnancy in the state of Oregon. Here's Connie and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. For a number of years, there was a lot of media attention paid to the fact that various pharmacies and large pharmacy groups like Walmart or others were saying, we're not going to give contraceptives to unmarried people, or we're not going to supply the morning after pill. And I know that especially in rural areas where there may be only one store for a large area, one pharmacy area, is that a problem? Is it still a problem? Are people finding it difficult to make access either contraception or especially the morning after pill in the rural Oregon?
Okay, good question. Thanks for that, Connie.
So I don't know the story in the rest of the state. At least in our area, the morning after pill is easily accessible. But again, the morning after pill is kind of a failure, right? So if you need the morning after pill, it suggests that you didn't plan for the possibility of pregnancy before the time that happened. So while it's very important, what we would like to do is not have as much use of the morning after pill because people did things before the sex act so that they reduce the risk of being pregnant.
All right. So here again, if the conversation is taken in advance, you end up not having as many situations where you'd need things like the morning after pill.
That's correct.
So then, is there a particular approach worked out? I mean, a particular set of things that will be said in conversations with women of childbearing age, or is that completely up to each individual physician and healthcare worker, for that matter?
As everything we do in this CCO, there's this intimate moment between the provider and the physician and the patient, where they talk about what goes on. However, sometimes providers need to be reminded that if you're seeing somebody in the childbearing age, that asking them, are they looking to be pregnant in the next year? And if the answer is not really, then the answer is, okay, what are you doing so that you won't get pregnant in the next year? So there is an approach that we're hoping that people will use. Again, it's up to docs themselves to decide whether they want to do this. But I think we've come up with a reasonable and fairly quick approach for doctors who approach women in the office. Again, if you come in and nobody ever mentions birth control, it may be hard for a woman to say, by the way, doc, I'm sexually active, I need birth control. I think if the doc approaches the problem in the beginning, saying, well, you look very healthy now, are you looking to be pregnant in the next year? And if the answer is no, then it says, what are you doing so that you won't be pregnant in the next year?
I imagine that could lead to an uncomfortable moment for the patient, but I mean, it's something that obviously needs to be asked. I just wonder if how you counsel people to get the question out there without making it seem like it comes totally out of the blue sky.
Well, actually, when you look at the other measures here, what we're looking at are sort of standardized questions that we ask pretty much all patients. Now, in this last year, we've talked about drugs and alcohol and depression. Recognizing in the past that people with drug or alcohol problems frequently saw physicians, and yet if the questions weren't asked, it wasn't clear that the issues were related to drug or alcohol abuse. So we're really pushing providers and doctors to ask a set of kind of standard questions when people come in so that it'll be the springboard for discussion. So, for example, in my office, when we see teenagers, we're screening each of the teenagers for drug and alcohol abuse, fairly quick screening. But if one of the answers is, yeah, I've been drunk in the last month, that now is a springboard for me to talk to them about their drinking. So I think we're going to see this as a more standardized approach where you get asked about your drugs, you get asked about alcohol, you get asked about your desire to have a pregnancy in the next year, And I think that's a good way to do it.
So it's a checklist. I mean, are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting some exercise? Are you eating well? Are you planning on being pregnant the next year?
I think it's all part of those regular things. And I think at some point that'll be that will kind of be the standard. And people will wonder sometimes when they're not asked about it, why they were not asked.
Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with the Umpqua Health Alliance, a CCO, coordinated care organization based in the Roseburg area. He's also the chair of the Metrics Committee, appointed by the governor to take a look at health metrics in the state of Oregon. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Oregon's approach to reducing unintended pregnancies. The phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I understand Oregon actually starts from a pretty good place. Is it somewhat better than the national average in the rate of unintended pregnancies?
We do okay in Oregon with the rate of unintended pregnancies, but we're still not nearly as good as we should. As a country, we're far worse off than many places in Northern Europe where the rate of unintended pregnancies is considerably lower than ours.
Do you have any idea how low?
Well,
I only ask because I noticed that the information I got here from the Guttmacher Institute indicates about 51% of the pregnancies in the United States every year are unintended.
Yes. However, it's a very culturally sensitive question, and so that it's a little difficult to compare to other areas. But when you look, for example, at teen pregnancies, and we know that many, many, many teen pregnancies are unintended. Our rate of teen pregnancy is considerably higher, in some cases twice as high as places in Northern Europe.
Hmm.
Although we've made good progress over the last 20 years. So the rate of teen pregnancies actually is considerably better than when I started in pediatrics. And I don't think it's because teens are having less sex. I think it's because there's better use of birth control among teens.
Is that a number that does tend to fluctuate, though? And I imagine to someone like you who's trying to keep an eye on metrics, maddeningly so, it seems like every time that the birth rate declines, there'll be an occasional burp and it comes up again. The teen birth rate, I mean.
Yeah, there are changes, and changes related to economy and changes related to other things in the environment. So many of the things that we measure do have some variation. But I think the trend, at least, the long-term trend in teen pregnancies is down. And certainly I can see that as a pediatrician. So I can certainly see the number of 15- and 16-year-old moms is really significantly reduced from what it was, say, 15 or 20 years ago.
There is an ongoing campaign, I know, in addition to what Oregon does, the Healthy People 2020. Is that state? Is that federal?
So Healthy People 2020 is a federal program, and it looks at places, if we truly were healthy, where we would be. For example, it calls for increased screening for colorectal cancer, decreased rates of smoking, increased rates of fitness.
All right. So, and is this one of the goals within Healthy People 2020?
So rate of unintended pregnancy or teen pregnancy, I believe, is one of the 2020 goals. I don't have right here what the rate is, but those are the kinds of things that are in the Healthy People 2020.
I'm curious, Dr. Dannenhofer, because you chair the Metrics Committee, as you mentioned. You mentioned that there were 17 measures originally, and then you retired some. What are some of that have been retired, and were they retired because you felt you'd achieved those metrics?
Yes. So we retired two metrics this year. One was follow-up after kids get started on medicine for attention deficit disorder. Turned out that Oregon had already done very well on that measure, and in this last year, almost all of the plans met that measure. And so we declared victory and went home on that measure. The other one, which was a very interesting measure, which was reducing the rate of early elective deliveries. So a typical pregnancy is 49 weeks, and it's 40 weeks. And we consider between...
you just gave a lot of women a real start there. What?
Yeah,
nine more weeks?
It is 40 weeks, and we consider that between 39 and 41 weeks is the optimal time to deliver babies. However, for various reasons, a number of babies were being delivered between 37 and 39 weeks so that they were slightly premature. And what we knew was, and the babies were being delivered at that 37 to 39-week range, had a far higher rate of complications. So working together with the state, with the March of Dimes, with the Hospital Association, and with the plans, we were able to bring the rate of those early elective deliveries down considerably, and pretty much all the plans met that goal, and so we retired that goal.
Okay, so ADD medication, early elective pregnancy, two goals easily met, and then not easily met necessarily, but
not easily met.
Yeah,
very, very difficultly met. But and so it's I'm very proud to say that the plans worked hard to get those two measures met.
And so, what were some of the goals that were instituted in place of those new things you wanted to aim for?
So one of those is a dental measure. So as dental comes into the coordinated care organizations over this next year, we're hoping that the dentists also participate in this. So our measures this year are sealants on molars of kids 6 to 9 and 10 to 12. So when the molars come out, they are prone to decay, and you can decrease the decay by putting sealants on them, basically a clear coat on them that prevents decay. And it's effective in reducing cavities in those two molars. And so we're really trying to bring up the number of kids who have sealants applied to their molars.
And then back to the where you do your daily work at the Coordinated Care Organization, in your case, the Umpqua Health Alliance. We've talked a lot about CCOs and their formation across several programs on the exchange. And just kind of give us an overall thumbnail sketch of how things are working versus what some of the expectations were when the whole CCO process got started.
So it's working pretty well. You know, we now care for about 25,000 people in our county, about a quarter of the population are members of our coordinated care organization. We have done a pretty good job in meeting the access needs for our members. We did very well on meeting our quality goals for last year. And, you know, we're still working on bringing all these new people in. So we brought about 8,000 new members on in this last year. So there are some growing pains with the new members. But it's working pretty well. Our community advisory council has put together a community health assessment and then a community health improvement plan. They worked on some really innovative stuff. For example, this past summer, we did the Kickstart Douglas County program. That was a program that we worked on with the Boys and Girls Club, with the YMCA, with the city, and we had 300 free or low-cost fitness events throughout the summer, things like walking in the park, Zumba, runs, half marathons, all of the kind of things that we did over the summer. And we think we burned 1 million calories and hope to get people increased in their fitness.
1 million calories spread across how many people?
More than a couple.
Right. Good to know. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is with the Umpqua Health Alliance, one of the CCOs doing business in the state of Oregon, coordinated care organizations, one of many involved in this effort to reduce unwanted pregnancy in the state of Oregon. Dr. Dannenhofer, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll do an election postmortem in hour number two with Dr. Bill Lunch, the former political scientist. Well, he's still a political scientist, formerly of Oregon State University. That's in hour two.